Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In headlines this Saturday, May the 25th, Pope Francis meets with children from Ukraine and Palestine as the Vatican's first ever World Children's Day kicks off in Rome. The Pope tells the national directors of the Pontifical Mission Societies to be creative and tenacious in the face of difficulties. And we speak to a doctor at the Massachusetts General Hospital about the global landscape of palliative care. In the Vatican, I'm Joseph Tullock. Today, Pope Francis is hosting the first ever World Children's Day. It's currently underway in Rome's Olympic Stadium with tens of thousands of children from all over the world in attendance. As that event is just getting started now, we'll bring you more information in tomorrow's broadcast. But earlier today, in preparation for the event, Pope Francis met privately with about 30 children from Ukraine, Palestine, Belarus and Indonesia. During the audience, Father Marcin Schmidt, who arranged the visit, introduced his children and their tragic stories. Some of the children had lost limbs and parents, and all came from war zones. They were accompanied by their doctors, whom Father Schmidt praised for their life-saving work. Among the group was Jana, a girl who ran the Boston Marathon a month ago with prosthetic legs. Pope Francis noted that many Ukrainian children often struggle to smile, yet he said he saw in Jana a symbol of hope and resistance. Father Schmidt also highlighted the darker side of the children's experiences, mentioning the horrific realities of children being sold for organs and parents trading their children as commodities. And Father Schmidt then brought the audience to a close by thanking the Pope for his hospitality, and the Pope responded in Ukrainian, saying, Slava Iisusu Christu, or praised be Jesus Christ. As that encounter was drawing to a close, the evacuation of children from the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv was being announced, and Stefan Boss has more on that.
After another nighttime Russian attack destroyed trains and tracks in Ukraine's northeastern Kharkiv region, authorities announced they are organizing the evacuation of children from the area. With Russian forces devastating the region in a powerful new offensive, officials said over the next 60 days, at least 123 orphans and children living without their parents would be evacuated. Earlier, Russia hit Ukraine's second largest city of Kharkiv with missiles Thursday, killing at least 7 people in a printing house and injuring many more. The owner says the strike would reduce Ukraine's book printing capacity by up to 40%. This is the largest enterprise of its kind in Ukraine. Textbooks, literature, this is a national problem, says Sergei Politucci, the owner of the Factor Drug printing plant. We will not be able to publish them on time this year if we do not recover quickly, he warns. The strikes came as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged the West to send more weapons to halt Moscow's increased attacks. Ukrainian authorities said that besides those killed, at least 20 people were wounded when S-300 missiles struck Kharkiv on Thursday. Explosions have reverberated around the city of some 1 million people, with a mother of one telling Vatican Radio that it was a terrible morning for her and her baby, and that the windows shook a lot. Authorities said that besides orphans, they already evacuated more than 11,000 people from the Kharkiv region since Russia launched an offensive there on May the 10th.
Present at that meeting with the Pope were also a number of children from Palestine. Nathan Morley has the latest on the situation there, reporting that the International Court of Justice has ordered Israel to stop its military onslaught in Rafah with immediate effect.
This case was brought to the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, by South Africa, which accuses Israel of violating the UN Genocide Convention. Israeli Justice Ministry official Gilad Noam said that Israel had been involved in a tragic war to defend itself and rejected South Africa's allegation regarding genocide. Now the European Union's top diplomat, Joseph Borrell, says the EU will have to make a choice of supporting Israel or international institutions and the rule of law.
Let's see which is going to be the answer of the European Union to the ruling of the International Court of Justice that has been issued today, which is going to be our position. We will have to choose between our support of the international institution and the rule of law or our support to Israel. And both things is going to be quite difficult to make compatible.
For their part, Israel said no power on earth would stop it going after Hamas. Separately, the Arab League and Egypt welcomed the order handed down by the ICJ. Arab League chief Ahmed Abdel Gid said the decision signalled the conviction of the judges that Israel had not taken any measures to respond to requests and conditions by the court in March. In a separate development, Israel has reportedly agreed to renew talks on a hostage deal with Hamas with a mediation of Qatar and the United States. That's according to a report on Israel's state-run television, broadcast on Saturday. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
Earlier this morning, before the World Children's Day got underway, Pope Francis met with members of the Somos Community Healthcare, a non-profit, physician-led network of 2,500 healthcare providers serving over 1 million people in the United States. In his address, the Pope praised the organization's focus on the importance of family doctors, as Francesca Merlo tells us.
Pope Francis on Saturday morning addressed members of Somos Community Care, acknowledging their concerted efforts to reevaluate the critical role of family doctors in both healthcare and the social sphere. Science today has made significant strides, Pope Francis began, recognizing the advancements made in medical technology and therapies. However, he emphasized that at its core, medicine remains a profoundly human encounter. When we are ill, he explained, we look to the doctor to be not only a competent professional, but also a friendly presence that we can count on. Drawing inspiration from St. Luke, referred to by St. Paul as the beloved physician, Pope Francis illustrated how Jesus approached the ill with compassion and care. The family doctor, he noted, embodies this spirit by offering both professional expertise and personal warmth. Pope Francis went on to highlight the second crucial aspect of the family doctor's role: being a member of the family. He stressed the importance of contextualizing each patient within their relationships and social ties. This community dimension of care, he stated, helps to create a network of affection, sharing, and solidarity around the ill person. Such an approach, Pope Francis went on to stress, strengthens human relationships and transforms suffering into a moment of shared communion. It benefits not only the patient, but also caregivers, family members, and the broader community. He cautioned against the risks of a bureaucratic, overly technical healthcare system, especially one influenced by market mentalities that neglect the true essence of health and care. Bringing his discourse to a close, Pope Francis offered his blessing for the ongoing work of Somos Community Care. Care and familiarity are two gifts of great value to those who suffer, he affirmed. He encouraged the members to persist in their mission and expressed his gratitude and support for their invaluable contributions to the health and well-being of communities. I am Francesca Merlo.
And Pope Francis has been busy today. He also received staff from the Pontifical Mission Societies, who had gathered near Rome for the annual General Assembly, and in his address the Pope encouraged them to cultivate community and to be creative and tenacious in the face of difficulties, recalling the example of martyrs who have sacrificed their lives for the faith. Lisa Zingarini has more.
Addressing participants in the annual General Assembly of the Pontifical Mission Societies in the Clementine Hall, Pope Francis focused his reflection on three fundamental characteristics which are particularly relevant for their service to the Church's mission.
Non dimentichiamo che la chiamata alla comunione implica uno stile sinodale.
The Pope first of all emphasized the communion dimension of this mission, remarking that the call to communion implies a synodal style, walking together, listening to each other, engaging in dialogue. In this regard, the Pope warned against proselytism. The Christian mission, he explained, is not about transmitting some abstract truth or religious conviction, but first and foremost is for enabling those we meet to have a fundamental experience of God's love. Pope Francis went on to speak about creativity, reminding the assembly that evangelical creativity stems from divine love and that all missionary activity is creative to the extent that Christ's charity is its origin, form and end. Finally, Pope Francis evoked tenacity. He urged the missionary societies to persevere in their work despite difficulties and hardships and not to give in to defeatism, recalling that some Christians go even as far as martyrdom to witness their faith in Christ.
Non lasciatevi scoraggiare.
Although you may come across many challenges, complex situations, burdens and weariness that accompany ecclesial life, do not be discouraged, he said. Concluding, Pope Francis thanked the Pontifical Missionary Societies for their generosity and dedication in promoting the missionary responsibility of the faithful, especially in caring for the children of the Pontifical Society of the Holy Childhood. I am Lisa Zingarini.
This week a conference gathered in Canada to discuss palliative care. Vatican Radio's Christopher Wells was on the ground and he spoke to Mark Stoltenberg, a member of the Division of Palliative Care and Geriatric Medicine at the Massachusetts General Hospital.
So I've had the opportunity to work in over 20 countries across three continents over the last 10 years. And I think that the headline that I want to share is currently the main challenge for palliative care globally is there is not enough access. The vast majority of patients in low and middle income countries currently do not have access to even basic palliative care. Small doses of morphine, somebody to go and visit them on a weekly basis, evaluate how they're suffering in the hospital as they're nearing the end of life, just does not exist. But the second part is there are wonderful, beautiful, innovative examples all over the world that this can be done. It doesn't have to be extraordinarily expensive, and basic palliative care can be provided to all. It's just our will, and that's all we need.
Can you give some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I described yesterday, so there's a sort of a WHO framework to how to think about strategy. So to truly provide palliative care to all patients in a country, you need healthcare policy, so laws stating that it's important. You need access to the medications and equipment that you need to deliver it. You need education and training so clinicians know how to do it. And then you also need research and then the actual service delivery. So you need the actual programs that are going to integrate in hospitals. Yeah, and how do you integrate with the public health system? How do you integrate with the hospital systems? So that's the strategy, and that is the same in each country. But how it's executed and the thing that I've absolutely seen is what it takes is individual heroes. So what I've had the opportunity of working with are people that have decided in a country where there's no palliative care or very little, they just decide and put it on their own shoulders. Dr. Beatrice Thompson in Belize is an example, Dr. Raj Gopal, which many might have heard of in Kerala, India, and the list goes on of the other examples where they just decided, I think palliative care needs to exist in my country. And it's a spirit of care and the way that they accompany their patients that over time that changes the people around them. Now, the roadmap to keep growing are those structural pieces that I mentioned, but the way it actually gets done is individual human beings being inspired by the unique sort of caritas of what it means to care for patients in this way, and that's where you really see the culture change and where things really take off.
Okay. And you practice in the United States.
Yep.
One of the things we've talked about in the last day or so is a societal change and how society approaches medical care, not just on the technical side, not just doctors and medicines, but also about how the whole community works together to provide and support palliative care. What does that look like in developing countries?
So that's a great question. So I think it often comes down to two different pieces. So one, modern medicine is very different than it was from 100 years ago or 200 years ago. So thank God, because of the science of medicine, we can cure and fix a lot of things. And that is always the first step in good palliative care, is the best medical care possible. Because if we can cure you or fix it or prevent it from happening, that's always ideal. However, still in the history of medicine, and I think it's going to be this way for another 100 years, 100% of our patients eventually die. So we know eventually their chronic illnesses, their disabilities, they continue to worsen as we age. So how we continue to care for patients in the face of their worsening and serious illnesses, that's where palliative care steps in and I think genuinely shifts and improves the culture of medicine to remember we can care even when we can't cure.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for tuning in, and please do join us again tomorrow. Goodbye.